This is the Real Talk University podcast, where your hosts, Andre and Christian, explore success stories outside of the classroom.
What is going on, Real Talk fam? Welcome back to a brand new episode of the Real Talk University podcast. I believe this is our fifth interview episode of season two, our sixth overall episode. And this is my favorite interview that we've done so far. We're excited to bring Jeff Hoffman on the show today. Jeff's known to be a serial entrepreneur, best known for being part of the original team that started Priceline, a mega successful internet company that I'm sure most of you are aware of. Jeff's been part of numerous other companies, including Ubid.com and ColorJar. And outside of his businesses, Jeff is a published author, distinguished speaker, producer of a Grammy-winning jazz album, and an executive producer of an Emmy-winning TV show. So yeah, Jeff has done a lot. Again, he's a billionaire, serial entrepreneur. So this is an episode that you're going to want to tune into. So next, we're going to go into our three main takeaways from the episode. The first takeaway is what Jeff gave an answer to one of my questions asking how to know if your idea is worth pursuing or not. And he said most of his CEO friends and other people in business would, you know, go to a whiteboard and brainstorm ideas with their team and see how they could come up with an MVP. And Jeff does things differently. He said what he would do is grab his keys and go out and talk to his target customers and his target audience to see if they're receptive to his idea. Because having an idea is great, but you have to know if the people you're trying to sell it to want it, and also if they would pay for it. So that was the first takeaway. The second takeaway is to skip parties and having fun now so that you can be massively successful later on in life. Jeff was asked this question once, whether or not he was upset that he had to sacrifice parties, you know, in college and high school and when he was younger. But he answered that his whole life is a party, really now. You know, he's just lived an awesome life with so many cool experiences with celebrities and these stars, and has just been so successful himself and gets to travel the world and do what he loves and share his knowledge with other entrepreneurs out there like us and everyone here listening to this podcast today. So by consistently working on your craft while others are, you know, partying and drinking and doing things they shouldn't be doing on a regular basis, you will be really successful. So be sure to keep your head on a swivel and work on, you know, your passion and your ideas every moment that you have possible so that you can enjoy the rewards later on in life. The last and final takeaway was getting around people you idolize as possible as long as you can bring value to them. Successful entrepreneurs, influencers, celebrities, these are people that are always constantly flooded by people who want to be in their circle or who want to meet them or who want to be around them. So you need to make sure that you have a value prop for them if you want any chance of sticking around. You have to bring value to the table when you approach these types of people, because otherwise they're not going to pay you any attention and there's no reason for them to keep you around and give you a seat at the table. So by fostering relationships with these types of people and offering value and filling a need for them, you'll find yourself, you know, with an inner circle of celebrities and all these people that you could never dreamed of working with, as Jeff has. So if you tune into the rest of the episode, you'll hear Jeff give greater details and more interesting stories than I can of these three takeaways and more. Again, this was my favorite episode that we've ever done so far, just because of the questions we were able to think of on the spot. I was really proud of Christian and I for doing a good job with that, and just the answers that Jeff was able to provide. He just nailed every single one with the perfect answer, exactly what I was looking for. So I think you guys will be really satisfied listening in this hour. How's it going, Real Talk fam? I just wanted to jump in here real quick before we start this new episode of Real Talk University with an offer that Christian and I have put together for you guys. Basically, as a thank you for listening and tuning into all of our episodes and supporting us along the way so far. So what we put together is the Podcast Blueprint ebook, which you'll have access to for free. Absolutely free. This is a downloadable PDF containing all the information, actionable steps, tips, resources, everything you need to launch your very own successful podcast in 30 days or less, exactly how Christian and I have done so. After reading our ebook, you'll be able to launch your own podcast today, book your dream guest for your interviews, and get ads and sponsors immediately. To claim your free copy today, visit the link at bit.ly/RTU ebook. That's bit.ly/RTU ebook. EBOOK. Get your free copy today before this offer expires. Awesome. Thank you. So my name's Andre. I'm here with my co-host Christian, and we're the host of a podcast named Real Talk University, exploring success stories outside of the classroom. And we thought you'd be a great fit for the podcast because of your background in entrepreneurship, all of your success that you've had throughout the years, and your passion to help, you know, young entrepreneurs out there like ourselves and our audience. So if you could just introduce to the audience who you are, what you do, and what you're up to.
Sure. My name is Jeff Hoffman. I am glad to be here on Real Talk University today. I am a longtime serial entrepreneur. I actually funded my own college education with a startup. So we can talk about that a little bit, but I didn't have any money for college, the university I wanted to go to. So I created my first startup as a college student so I could get through and pay for my own education. And I'm an engineer, software engineer by education, with my degree, but I've been building startups really my whole life, mostly in the tech space, some in sports, entertainment, and media.
That's awesome. Can we just dive deeper into the whole idea that you started up like a startup while you were in college? Because for us, we're college students, we try to impact the college-based audience. So if you could just go into that, that'd be extremely helpful.
Sure. So I picked a university that was certainly out of my league financially, probably academically, but I got in anyway. I grew up out in, in a public school system in Arizona, and I wanted to go to Yale. And I got into Yale, but I couldn't afford to go to Yale. And, you know, pretty much everybody's advice, as some of your listeners will know, is they're like, man, just come home, get a job, or go to community college. And none of those things are wrong. They just weren't what I wanted to do. I wanted that engineering degree at that school, and I just couldn't afford it. So, you know, I sat down one day and said, what are my options? Actually, I'll tell you guys really quickly because this was funny. I got kicked out of class since I hadn't paid and I could not be attending classes, and called down to the finance office. And they're like, you can't go to school here till your tuition is paid. And I was like, man, I don't even have money to go home. And they're like, well, you can't go to class until you pay the rest of it. I had all the aid and scholarships I could get. I just couldn't come up with the rest. And I was sitting there and I saw something. The guy's like, are you going to leave my office? And I was like, I don't have anywhere to go, man. I'm broke. And I saw a brochure in the financial office that said monthly payment program. And I was like, can I get on the monthly payment program? He said, you just told me you don't have any money. And I said, right. And he said, well, then why would you want to get on the monthly payment program? I said, because then I got 29 more days to find some. So he put me on the program. And I went and started my first business, which was a little software company doing custom work for local businesses in the community. And every time I would complete a job, I'd take a check, kiss it goodbye, and take it over to the finance office. And I funded my whole education running a little software company.
That's incredible. I have so many questions running through my head about the entire process. But one thing that stood out was, again, you had no money and then you started a business. And back in, you know, when you were at Yale compared to 2019, the resources and the internet wasn't like it is today. So what are some tips that you have for bootstrapping a startup or a side hustle while in college?
Well, here's the thing. A lot of people say, I don't have any money to start something. But you have two things that are even more important than money in startups, right? You have your brain and you have your heart. You know, the intelligence and the passion are worth far more than money. I know a lot of people that were funded and never created anything because they didn't have the drive and they didn't have the smarts. And I know a lot of people that never had any money, but they had the passion, they had a drive, they fought their way through it, and they succeeded. So what I did was I sat down and said, what kind of business can you start with no money? Well, the answer is intellectual property, right? Because if it's hard goods, if I'm selling something, a product, let's say that I was going to sell food on campus, I got to pay for the food up front. I got to pay people to deliver it. And any physical product is kind of capital intensive. But something like software, is intellectual property. I'm just really selling my brain. I can sit and code all night and go to class all day and code all night. Same thing if you were, let's say it was event planning. You could sell your services in the community where your university is. Go to all the clubs and restaurants and say, look, I think I can fill your club tonight or fill the empty tables at your restaurant. I'm going to go out and do promotion and do marketing. That's not so much about money as it is about energy and cleverness. So the answer is I tried to think of something I could do without money, and it turned out in my case writing code was something that I just needed to sit in front of a computer long enough to get code written, and that's something I could sell that didn't take money up front.
That's amazing. And I just want to ask, was that your first entrepreneurial venture, or did you have some experiences as an entrepreneur before getting into college and that experience that you mentioned?
Well, man, I would have never used the word entrepreneur, but I'll tell you, with a single mom who was working multiple jobs to try to take care of us and make ends meet, I never wanted to ask my mom for money. I saw how hard she was working, and I wanted to take care of myself. So I was industrious, right? Whether it was mowing lawns, cleaning pools, hauling trash. One time I was selling like garden seeds door to door. I was always out there in that hot 112-degree Arizona sun, finding some work I could do that somebody would pay me to do so that I could be independent. So it wasn't so much about money. It was about independence, which takes money. But I wasn't focused on the money. I was focused on never having to ask my mom or anybody else to help me with anything. So I would say, without knowing it, I was very entrepreneurial because I was always finding something to do that I could make my own dollar, my whole, really, from childhood.
That's honestly incredible, because I feel like most college kids obviously don't have the most money. They have to rely on their parents. And even if they do come into some sort of money, they're looking to spend it on going out to eat, going out at night, like anything they can do to have fun. So your selflessness is inspiring. But I just want to go into, what did you do after you graduated from Yale? Like, what were your first steps out of college?
Well, I have to tell you, well, let me back up really quick to something you just said, because that was important, because I get this with, I speak at campuses all over the world, actually, and all over the country. And college kids, you don't get anything worth having in life without sacrifice, right? Nothing good, nothing worth having comes easy. And I always tell them this story that there were Friday nights in college. My buddies were all like, hey, man, party. There's a good party going on. Let's go. And I'd start to get up, and because that sounded like fun, they're all going out to a party. And I would say, look, I made a commitment to finish this particular work, whether it was schoolwork or my company, by the end of this week, so I'm not going to the party. You guys go on without me. And you're going to have to sacrifice something, right? And I made that commitment because I wanted what I wanted, and you got to work for it. And it's funny because now, I'm blessed enough that later in life I was able to start a music company and a film company, and now I get to travel around the world. And somebody said when I was in college, one kid said, so are you telling us we should never go to a party again? And before I could answer, the kid next to him said, no, man. He pointed at me and he goes, that dude's whole life is a party now. That's not exactly true, but it's not exactly false. If you are willing to pay your dues and skip a few parties when everyone else is having fun, you're going to be the one that everyone else is asking to borrow money and asking for a job because you got it done. You're not going to skip parties the whole rest of your life. You got to work when you got to work. And I was willing to do that, but I did skip some fun along the way to get where I was trying to go.
Yeah, and I feel like the fun that you have now is honestly a lot better than the fun you would have had in college anyways. But just back to the thing I was saying before, like once you graduated from Yale, what was like the first step that you took? Was it an entrepreneurial venture?
It was not. So I had the – and a lot of you guys will relate to this because your parents are telling you the same thing mine did. I obviously had some loans in addition to the money I made in scholarship at the end of college. And I got an engineering degree, software engineering, and everybody – my parents especially. Your parents are constantly telling you, go out and get a job, go out and get a job. And I was a lot of pressure, society pressure, to focus on just getting a good job with a good salary at a good company. And I'm going to be honest with you guys, I folded under that pressure. And I went and got an engineering job at a big engineering company. And what I had was a good job at a good company, making a good salary. But you know what I did not have, guys? I did not have a good life because I hated my job. I sat in this cubicle at this big company working for this guy that I thought was a complete jerk and hating my life every day. So I sat and I thought, if my choices are to have a good paycheck and hate my life, or maybe I'll be broke again, but at least I'll be living, I'm going to take the latter. So I only had this engineering job, And there's nothing in my talk that's about right or wrong. If you want to work for a big company your whole life, have at it. This is a DNA thing, right? Entrepreneurship is about your DNA. And mine just wouldn't let me sit there the rest of my life in that cubicle. So I quit that job after just a couple of years at the big engineering company. Everybody yelled at me. My parents were telling me I was stupid. Quit my job, cold turkey, no money, no savings account, no salary. And I've been doing startups the entire rest of my life since then.
That's incredible. I just have a personal question because I came into college as an accounting major. I had every intention of working a full-time job after college, but like since I've met Andre here, we've gotten exposed to a lot of great entrepreneur success stories. So I'm just like wondering how I should go forward with balancing that, because I definitely do want to start my own business. It's my dream now, but I also am like surrounded by the pressure of like networking with firms and things like that.
So here's the thing. I will say this. During those years, even though I didn't work there that long, in the corporate world, I learned a lot. So one path, you know, the hard part is if you just jump out in the world straight out of school and do a startup is you don't have much experience. So it's perfectly okay for people to say, I'm going to go work at a company in this industry a few years and get an education, right? You learn about the industry before you launch a startup in that industry. So there's nothing wrong with getting a job first. My issue was that people were expecting me to stay there the rest of my life. If you want to go learn, it's like one of the things that big company did was they sent me to this project management training. And that helped me so much when I was an entrepreneur. Now there's no one to manage the project. You got to budget it and you got to schedule it and you got to resource it. I would have not know how to do any of that. So going to work at a company or doing internships during your college summer or during your semesters is a really, or even a gap year where you're doing something. All those are adding to your education, which will increase your chances of being successful as a startup. But if you have, and the real answer for you is whether you go in the job market or jump in the startup market is this. It depends on the quality of your idea. If you have a killer idea that you know in your heart and soul is probably going to work, and if you don't do it now, someone else will. If you got a great idea and the world is giving you that feedback, then maybe you should go start that startup. If you're just saying, I want to be an entrepreneur, I don't work at a big company, but you don't have a killer idea, then maybe you go work somewhere until you get that idea, and then you jump into entrepreneurship. Because without a good idea, you know, your startup's not going to go anywhere anyway.
That's some great advice, because I feel like having a concrete plan in place is very like important for college students, because it could get ugly if you don't. And I just want to hit one topic quick about, you know, knowing if it's the right idea or not. So obviously there's always uncertainty and you never know what the future is going to hold, and execution plays a large part in that. But what are some things that you would recommend to people who have an idea that they think is it, but they just want to kind of test it to see if they should go all in?
So two parts to that answer. Testing it is good. But, you know, when I go out and speak, one of the things I always tell people is, actually, I was doing this TV show and with these like CEOs, and the host said, what's the first thing you do when you have a good idea, like you just said? And all of them said, man, I get my best people and we go sit to a whiteboard. We go in the conference room. And I said, I get my keys and I go out to the parking lot. And they're like, what? The first thing you need to do when you get a good idea is get out of your dorm room, get off campus, go find the people in the world that you think are going to pay for that thing and ask them if they're going to pay for it. Because so many people, they go out and I say, what are you working on? And they say, my MVP. We're creating our minimally viable product. Then we're going to push it out in the world. Then we're going to hope someone wants it. And I'm like, why don't you just go ask them first before you build anything if anybody likes it? So if you have a product that's for housewives and you're a college kid, you need to call your mom or somebody and say, can you set me up to go meet 20 of your friends? Because I need to ask some questions. Get out of the office, go out in the world, ask the people before you build anything, would you use this? What does it have to do? And by the way, the third question is more important. Would you pay for it? Because so many times when you ask people, wouldn't it be cool to have one of these, and you show them your idea, they say, yeah, that's great. And then you say, by the way, they cost $1,100. They're like, no, thanks. So I tell people this. That's called value equation. Value equation is, will a lot of people in the world pay you more for the idea you have or the thing you're building than it costs you to build it? If the answer is no, guys, then congratulations, you have a hobby. Because hobbies are things you spend your money on and no one cares that you're doing that. Businesses are things that other people look over your shoulder And they say, man, what is that? And you say, I'm creating this. And they say, well, they whip out their credit card. Can I buy one? And you say, oh, calm down. I'll call you back as soon as it's ready. You want to be building something that people are trying to pay you for. If you're not getting that reaction from people out in the world that you're expecting to buy it, then you're not ready yet. So that's the first thing you do with an idea is go out to the real end user, ask them if they like it, but more importantly, ask them not just will they pay, but how much would they pay, and pay attention to those answers.
Yeah, that's extremely important advice. And I had personal experience with that myself where I did what you said in the beginning is you build a product for someone that you don't even know if they need it or not. And obviously that's time consuming and you don't even, it's risky because you have no idea whether they need it or not. So that's great advice. And I just want to get into a little bit about the story of when you joined Priceline, just because of, you know, the knowability of that company and how important that was to your career and some of the early steps you took to make an impact there.
Sure. So the idea for that company came from an intellectual property guy. His name is Jay Walker up in Connecticut. Jay had a company called Walker Digital. And Jay looked at business models all the time. And so Jay's the one that had this idea for really buyer-driven commerce, the reverse auction, right? It was the name your own price. Instead of you going out on the internet and looking and looking, you know how much money you have. But the people whose websites you're on don't know what you have. So you're looking at what are they selling, what's the price, and can I afford to buy from them? Nope, go on to the next internet. Go on to the next site. They have the product I want, but the price is too high. The next one has a good price, but it's not exactly the right product. So Jay had this idea, why don't you just ask people how much money they have, and we'll go out and find one for them. And so Priceline, he patented something called the name your own price, but which is the reverse auction. And so at that time, Jay called myself and a bunch of other people and said, I got a business idea, but let's go build a company out of it. So this is, I don't know, 97-ish, something like that, 96, 97. So, you know, compared to now, a relatively small group of us all came together to try to build a company out of his idea. And that was a really fun time launching it. We actually launched multiple companies. We launched the Priceline Travel. We launched a consumer company, a wholesale company. But the internet was brand new. And we were all learning, what does it take to sell to a customer you've never met? Because prior to those years, there was no internet. Everything that was sold in stores. So it was a great learning experience. We were all very blessed because the company was very successful. But it was just the right place at the right time. And I learned so much from being part of that early team.
Yeah, that's amazing. Christian's going to ask a question here real quick. I just wanted to ask quickly before I give the mic over is what was it like starting a company during like the dot-com bubble burst? Because I know you were involved with the company around that time.
Yeah. So here is the good and the bad of that. The good was it was so exciting because nobody knew the answers. By the way, have you ever heard this expression that being an entrepreneur is like jumping off a cliff and trying to build an airplane on the way down? If that scares you, you should not be an entrepreneur. If the unknown excites you, you're in the right place. So the fact that no one knew what was going to happen next, I thought was really exciting. But so if there was a negative, it was that no one knew what they was doing because you couldn't look at another internet company like you can now because there never was one. You know, that was one side of it. The other side, though, was it was so exciting. The really good part was that e-commerce business and business models and selling to things to people you've never met and never seen and selling online, none of that had ever been done before. So it was so much fun to be, you know, in the group of stagecoaches that were filled with pioneers. We were the first people, these early internet companies, to ever try this. And it was so intellectually challenging. Because you got to figure out how you're going to get people to trust you and input their credit card that have never met you and never seen you. So it was a really fun experience, and I learned so much, and I really enjoyed it. But it was equal parts hard and easy based on the fact that no one had ever done this before.
Right, and I think the uncertainty is enough to bring fear to anybody, no matter how like mentally tough you are. Like you could say that you know what you're doing, but in reality, if you have no idea, it's really hard. And that's especially true for this podcast because Andre and I as a team have been able to conquer a lot of things together. So I'm just going to ask, like, how important was it that you assembled the right team early on so you guys could scale the company and build it out successfully?
So I think it is way, way, way more important than a lot of entrepreneurs realize. You know, you cannot nothing that was great that's ever been built was built by one person or two people. you absolutely have to have a team. And sometimes when people ask me for one piece of advice to give startup entrepreneurs or solopreneurs, whether it's one or two people in the company, I always tell them this. One of the most important things you can learn is to surround yourself with people smarter than you. Each of us is really only good at one thing. I have never hired an accountant who writes my marketing slogans and does my engineering, right? And I've never hired an engineer who does all our finances. These are different people with different skills. Just because you're the founder or the CEO of a company doesn't mean you're smarter than anyone that works for you. You're probably only good at one thing. By the way, I thought I was a good engineer. It turns out I'm way better at marketing and not very good at engineering. So I got smarter engineers. I got finance people because I don't know that. I got sales people because I can market, but I don't know how to close well. Surround yourself with people smarter than with you. And right now, while you're in college, start building your network now. And I know you've been told that, but the way you do that is a little different than you think. When you meet people, ask them to tell you at least these two things. What's your story? What's your backstory? To learn about, get context on them, and then ask them what their dream is. What's your backstory and what do you want to do with your life? So for me, every time I started a company, I already knew who I was calling. I'd be like, man, I got to call Christian. He's perfect for this. You don't want to start building a team when you need them. You want to have a network of people that you know what they're capable of. So the second you have an idea, you grab a piece of paper and you're already drafting players on your team because they've already been through tryouts, if that makes sense to you guys.
No doubt. And the cool thing for me and Christian here is that that's what we've been doing with the podcast, is interviewing people like you and learning about, you know, all these successful entrepreneurs and what they're good at and how they've, you know, come to success, and asking those questions that you mentioned. So that's something we're doing. That's something we recommend to our friends as well. We host workshop events and whatnot to help teach like the art of podcasting as like the new form of networking, because of, you know, how it just allows you to connect with people like you all over the world. So my next question is just, so you mentioned about how everyone has one thing they're good at. So for a lot of kids in our, you know, age bracket, they might not know what that one thing is. So how do you recommend they find it?
I suddenly don't hear you.
Are you able to hear me now?
Okay, it came back. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just wondering, you mentioned that everyone has one thing that they're good at. So for college kids that are around our age, like 19, how do you recommend they find that one thing if they haven't already?
That's a really good question, too. And I think the answer to that is that the answer is not in your dorm room. The answer is not on Xbox. The answer is not in the club. The answer is, sometimes people say to me, they say, man, you've been so lucky at so many things. I say, no. What I've been is engaged. The answer is out there in the world. So I'm going to tell you this. The more places you go, the more people you meet, and the more things you do, you know, outside of your Xbox, outside of your dorm room, outside of the club, the more likely you are to stumble across a moment where you say, holy crap, this is a huge problem and no one has an answer for it. You have to be engaged in the world around you. When somebody says, hey, we're going here, and your first response is, why would I go with them? I'm not interested. There would be times I would just shrug and say, hell, I'll go. I don't even know where you guys are going, but I'll go, because you're taking me somewhere I wouldn't have gone on my own, to have an experience I wouldn't have had on my own. And who knows what might happen there. So the more you get out, the more places you go, the more things you do, the more people you meet, the more likely you are to find yourself in a moment where you say, wow, this is my moment. This is my aha. I've just stumbled across something that a problem I'm going to solve in the world that's going to be my thing.
Right. And I don't know if you heard, but Andre was saying how, like, with the podcast, we've been able to meet these people such as yourself who have all these skill sets. We've met some lower scale entrepreneurs that we've actually connected with and partnered with on some projects. So just getting out there, figuring out what we're good at, what we enjoy doing. That's basically why we started the podcast. And it's really been a big help to us so far.
Well, you know, you're right, exactly right. You guys are the perfect example of that. Setting up a podcast where you can talk to different people with different backgrounds and listen to them increases your odds of getting off a podcast one day and say, wait a minute, that just triggered a thought in my head that you wouldn't have had if you were just talking to each other all day and no one else.
That's right. I just want to go into some of the more recent things that you've done. Like, on your LinkedIn profile, it says that you've produced TV shows, produced movies in Hollywood. Like, those aren't just casual things you put on like a resume or anything. So could you just dive deeper into that? Because it's very interesting for us.
Sure. So I'm going to say this. The single most important reason to be an entrepreneur is not to try to get rich, even though the media loves to focus on that. the reason to be an entrepreneur is because that is the job that enables you to design your own future, right? So what entrepreneurs get to do is, instead of complaining about the job you have or constantly searching for the job you want, why don't you just go make it? Why don't you go create the job you always wish you had? So that's what I did. I was like, man, I would love to be – I was at a concert one day, and I was just so lit up by the power of music in the moment. And I was like, man, I would love to produce a concert. You know what all my friends said? Dude, you're a software engineer. You don't know jack about music, and no one's going to hire you. No one's going to give you a job in music. And I said, well, then I'll just go make one. They're like, make one doing what? And, you know, the key to entrepreneurship, as we said, was solving real problems in the world. So I went out, and I started studying, and I mean studying. A lot of late nights studying the music industry. How does it work? How do you produce concerts? What's involved in it? And what are the problems that need to be solved? Well, to give you an example, I can't write the music. I can't sing the music. I can't dance. Those are all problems. But you know what else you have to do in the music biz? People like Taylor Swift and Beyonce, they don't hire themselves. A producer puts a concert together. That person has to put together financing for the concert. That person has to hire Taylor Swift. Then at the back end, in the middle, someone does choreography and songwriting and lighting. And the back end, somebody has to decide who's going to come to this concert. They have to market it, promote it, advertise it. And I was like, I know how to solve both those problems. I can put together business proposals, and I can market and promote things. So that's what I did. I launched a music company. I created a job for myself. I focused more on the back end, but my part-time job was putting the business proposal together for a concert to pitch to the venues. We're going to bring these artists. We're going to charge this much for tickets. Here's why we think this is going to be a profitable concert, because of all this research we did on the demographic customer. And then in the back end, once we got them to agree, I wrote marketing plans and came up with crazy fun contests on radios. So you get to design your own future by creating the job you wish you had. That's what we did. And we launched a music company, and I wound up producing concerts. We wound up doing tours. We worked with everybody from NSYNC and Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears and Elton John and Beyonce and all these different people. And then we did the exact same model for the movie biz. I did that for a few years, and I was like, man, I've always wanted to make – I was telling my friends in the theater, man, I've always wanted to make a movie. And again, they're laughing at me. Here's the crazy dreamer, Jeff, again, that's got these insane ideas. He's a software engineer. And I said, well, but it's a business. So once again, I'm going to go study the business of filmmaking and see if there's a way I could create a job for myself. So we started our own production company, and we started to make films. And because we were good at marketing promotions, our films actually got into theaters. And we've been blessed enough, again, that, you know, an album that I helped produce won a Grammy a few years ago, and some TV that I executive produced won an Emmy last year. So we've been very lucky to be in it. But the key is, decide what you want to do and go after it.
That's incredible. I'm just curious, like, how were you able to leverage yourself and get these big names to, like, agree to perform concerts for you? Because obviously you weren't the most, like, reputable booking agency at first. So, like, obviously the venue Correct. Wants to hear a big name coming to their arena or whatnot. So how were you able to get the big names like Beyonce to land a deal with you?
So it's not so much about the names. You start smaller, although I went, you know, I didn't really start smaller. We kind of went for the top. But it's about, let me phrase it this way. To live an epic life, you need to become valuable to the people that you want to be around. You become valuable to the people you want to be around by solving some problem that they were literally just sitting there stressing over. Make sense to you guys? So when I started studying the industry, I started looking at, this is the first half of it, at what problems do the people in the music industry have that they wish someone would ring their doorbell and say, here, I fixed it. And so that's where you start. Again, be valuable to the people you want to be around. So the second part of that, so that means you got to learn how to solve a problem and develop a skill that someone cares about. You need a solution that people are looking for. But the second part we already talked about was boldly network. I would send out emails. You could send out emails to 100 reputable people who've never heard of you, who are real names and you're not. And 90, you could send out 900, 1,000, 999 of them will not reply to you. But if you quit, right? Now you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Eventually, one person out of 1,000 emails back and goes, who the hell are you and why are you emailing me? And you say, man, I'm trying to get in your industry. And you know what that person says? Why would anyone want you in the industry? and you say, because I've been studying the distribution model for digital, I'm making this up, digital distribution of concert tickets or something. And they're like, oh man, we were actually thinking about that the other day. And you say, I think I got a solution. And they say, well, now you got something I want. You might have a solution to a problem we haven't solved yet. And they'll take the meeting. And you only need one to do that. And when one of those people believes in you, they start talking. I had a time, the first time that I talked to the NSYNC guys, was I was doing something with Elton John. And the manager of NSYNC said, well, I saw you with Elton John. So if those guys think, you know, even though you were a complete unknown the day before, if those guys think you have some value, then we want to hear what it is. So find a problem you can solve, become valuable to the people you want to be around, and then shamelessly promote, meaning, but I say shamelessly, but I mean, have a real answer, a real solution. You got to really solve something they need. And it's been fun. I'll just end with this. It's been fun because there have been meetings that I've been at with people that I never dreamed that I'm fans of. You know, whether it was Christina Aguilera or Pitbull's become a friend of mine. I do work with Nelly and other people. These are people that called me. And I'm like, wait, what am I doing here? And they're like, we have this problem we don't know how to solve. We write music and we sing. You're a business guy that knows our industry. And they said, we have a problem we want to solve. And everybody says, you're the go-to guy. So for all of you listening, if you want an epic life, become the go-to guy or the go-to girl for the people you want to hang with. And eventually they will go to you if you have something they want.
That's so awesome. And I'm sure you know of this man, but Jerry Weintraub, that's like, you're like the second coming.
Of course.
That's so cool.
That's an absolute role model.
Yeah, the story just lines up perfectly. And I just want to backtrack just a little bit about how you said, as soon as you had an idea for all this, you went and you studied exactly what you needed to know about it. So how important is that? Just the importance of like being prepared to go into whatever the idea is, and what are some of your tactics on doing that?
Sure. So, you know, they always talk about, you know, luck, right? Luck. And let us take the elevator pitch, right? Luck is the fact that you open the door and step in the elevator, and the person that you've been trying to get a meeting with for a year that has never replied to you is standing in the elevator. That's luck. Preparation is the other 99%. It's in those 30 seconds you turn to the guy and say, hey, I just want to share something with you really quickly. So, you know, you take luck anytime you can get it. But have you ever heard that expression? It seems the harder I work, the luckier I get, right? Luck does favor the prepared. And those situations, so preparation really is everything. And you know what I always do? I pretend. I do this backwards thing. I imagine that right now I'm standing there talking to pick a person, Elton John, Elton John's manager. And I role play it. And I say, okay, if I actually was standing in that guy now, what's he probably going to ask me? I do this whole what if thing. What would he say to me? Well, the first thing he'd say is, who the hell are you? Then the second thing he'd say is, why are you wasting my time? And then the third thing he'd say was, why should I listen to you? So I go through these role plays and I act the whole thing out and I try to come up with answers for everything. I play what if. What is everything? If I ever got to the moment I dream of, what are all the things that might come up in that moment? And what would be my answer to him? So what would happen is, when I finally got myself in the right place at the right time, I had a few times where the people started grilling me, expecting me to collapse. And they're like, man, you got an answer for everything. And I said, well, I've been studying this every night, you know, for months and months and months, hoping I might meet someone like you at this moment. And they would smile and say, you remind me of me when I was starting my career. And they were impressed that I studied so much and I did every what if scenario and I role played that meeting that by the time I had it, I was perfectly calm and ready to go. So study. And by the way, one more thing about studying. Sometimes people say to me, you know, then why do I need to stay in school? Why do I need to finish, get my college degree? I need to be really clear about something. The reason that I was able to go attack the, you know, the internet biz, then the music biz, you know, then film. Now we're doing a sports company. The reason for that is because I'm a good learner. And when people say to me, why am I taking math, man? I'm never going to do math again. I don't do math in my career. I was never good at it. But my math teacher taught me analytical problem solving. My history teacher taught me how to do research. My English teacher taught me how to write proposals, right? We had a marketing class where they taught me how to present ideas. What you are learning in college is not the stuff you're learning. You're learning how to learn. So stay in school. Learn how to learn. What I'm really good at is when it's time to learn something new, I've got the skills of a good learner. Even if I didn't know, even if I can't do math, I learned the problem-solving skills that math taught me, and I'm better at attacking new things.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't know about Andre, but I personally sometimes even say to myself, like, even if this course or whatever, like, gen ed I'm taking is irrelevant to my, like, future and career, I just try to, like, take learning lessons out of it and see how I respond to whatever the professor throws at me just so I can adapt to real-world changes with those newly found skills. So I was just, like, wondering, what was it like to be surrounded by all these A-list celebrities and, like, musicians? Because obviously not everybody gets to be around them, and your preparation that you prepared, like, for months for got you in that situation. So what was it like to finally be in that?
Well, you know, again, the first thing is everybody wants to be around influencers. So they don't need somebody else trying to be around them. They don't need you. Unless, or do they, right, is the question. So what I tried to do was be prepared enough that I had something to offer them that they would listen and they would say, I remember, I'll give you an example. And you know, he's out touring right now with TLC. But Nelly, right? Nelly's the biggest part of his prime was, you know, before your time a little bit. But you guys know his songs like Hot in Here and stuff. So I remember one day when Nelly met with me, he put his arm around. I was all excited to meet this guy, just like I was with when I became friends with Pitbull. And both these guys kind of put their arm around me and said, I got some questions for you. And I was like, wait, what? You know, I'm the one with the questions. I can't believe I'm standing here. Do you know, are you guys football fans at all?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Do you know who Marcus Allen is, the Hall of Fame running back from USC?
What pro team was he on?
So he played for the Raiders, okay, yeah. The Chiefs. But the Chiefs. Anyway, the point is he was an all-pro running back. And I was at this event, he was there, and I was looking all over for him, and I was so excited to meet one of my football heroes because he was a big star during my day. And I walked up and I turned, I said, wow, Marcus Allen. He said, excuse me, are you Jeff Hoffman? I was like, wait, what? How do you know my name? He said, oh, man, I've been looking for you. I was like, what? I've been looking for you for 10 years. He said, no, man, I got some questions, and everybody said, you know this stuff. Can we sit down and talk? So when you get your moment, have something to contribute. If all you are is another hanger-on or fan, they don't need that. But if you can help them with something they need help with, suddenly you've achieved respect and you've achieved value and people want to be around you. So that's what it was. I took the time to study what kinds of things do they need help with, do they worry about, do they not already know, and how could I help with them? One of them, one last thing on that. A lot of successful people want to start charities and foundations. So you wouldn't believe how much homework and research and study I did on how to build charities and foundations and do contributions and work with youth. So what wound up happening was a lot of the athletes and entertainers I became friends with called me because they said, hey, I want to donate money and I want to start my own foundation. And a lot of people said, you know how to do that. Will you help me? And that's because I developed a skill that when I was around them, they didn't want to talk about last night's football game or the concert. They wanted to talk about, how do I work with inner city youth? Can you help me do that?
Wow, that's so cool. And I mean, it really just comes down to the basics of solving a problem and adding more value than anyone else, right? Absolutely. So one more question before we get into the lightning round is, we've talked a lot on this podcast about all these successes and awesome moments in your career. But I just want to ask if you've had any, you know, big failures that you could remember that also contributed to where you are now, just because how big of a role failure plays in the world of entrepreneurship.
Most definitely. And in fact, it literally created the lesson that I gave you guys a few minutes ago. We were early in the internet. We had this crazy idea that you didn't have to drive to the mall to buy a product. Let's say you wanted to buy a sweater. You had this thing in your house called a computer, and you could just order it online using this brand new thing called the internet. Well, me and my friends were software engineers, so we understood the internet and thought it made perfect sense. But the first customer we literally thought were stay-at-home moms with little kids. It was too much of a hassle to load them all up and go to the mall. So we were going to tell them, just go over to your desk, get on your computer, and you can order that sweater without going to the mall. The problem was not one of those housewives understood the internet, browsers, encrypted keys, security, anything. And so we failed miserably. The company was a failure because no one bought anything at that time. And that's where I learned the lesson that never be blinded by your own brilliance. If you are selling a product to a stay-at-home mom and you are not a stay-at-home mom, you need to get out of the office, out of the lab, and go interview 100 stay-at-home moms before you build anything. I failed miserably because I thought I knew, even though I didn't live the life of the customer. So now we go live a day in their life and spend time with them to avoid making that mistake again. But that was a miserable failure.
Yeah, I think that's like the biggest takeaway for me from this interview is like you could have the best idea in the world, but if people aren't thinking on like your wavelength, they're just not going to get it. So actually going out and talking to the people that you want to sell to and figuring out how you can make it most accessible for them is probably the best way to do it. So I really, really like that advice.
That is a perfect summary because you sit there frustrated and say, how do they not get this? It doesn't matter. What matters is they don't, they're not on your wavelength, and you're wasting their time and yours. If you can't explain it on their wavelength, go do something else.
Absolutely. All right. So we're just going to jump into a quick lightning round here before we let you go. So first of all, do you have any questions that you'd like to ask us before we get into the lightning round questions?
Yeah, let me just ask you one for both of you guys. At this point in your life, in college, what does entrepreneurship sound like or mean to you guys? When you look at all your options for your life and your career going forward, what do you think of and why are you interested in entrepreneurship?
So for me, it's exactly what you mentioned earlier in this interview, is it's not about the money. It's more about the freedom and life experiences that you could pile up through pursuing entrepreneurship. I mean, that, I don't know how else I'd put it, but it's experiences.
Oh, that was well put.
Yeah, just experiences and freedom to just do whatever I want at the right time. And I mean, of course, if you do it the right way, you won't have to worry about the money side of things, which just adds back to the freedom and experiences. So that's how I'd put it. I'll let Christian answer as well.
Excellent.
Yeah, thanks. For me, it's just being involved in something you're passionate about and coupled with being free, like Andre said, to just set up shop wherever you want, maybe even work remotely in today's age off of a laptop from anywhere in the world, connect with the right people that are on the same, have the same mindset as you. It's really just like fulfilling your dreams and just following your heart, because not like entrepreneurship isn't for everyone, but if you're into it, I think you should just go all in and see where it takes you. So that's why I'm in it.
That's fantastic. I really appreciate it. And that was the answer I was hoping to hear. So let's go ahead and close out with our lightning round.
Sounds good. All right. So the first question is probably going to take you a second to process. But if you could have dinner with any three people, dead or alive, who would they be and why?
Oh, man. That is a really hard one. Well, the first one is super easy because it's my dad. I lost my father and I miss him so bad. And he would be the first person in the world I wish I could go have dinner with again. So that one was easy. They're not going to be, by the way, mine aren't famous people or celebrities per se. I also lost my best friend to a drowning accident. His name was Michael. And I think about him all the time. We're still talking about him today, right? I would get more value because it would fill my heart. I don't need someone to fill my business side of my life or, you know, my wallet or anything. It would fill my heart unbelievably to see Michael again. Those would be my first two. The third one, there are some figures, neither of those two are living, obviously, dead or alive. There are people that I'm fascinated by, that I like the way they think, that I like the way they operate. I'm making up words now because I'm stalling for time in a stream of words. That is just such a hard one.
It's all good. Take your time.
I don't know. It might have been, but it's only because I've been looking at this a lot lately with a lot of the issues in our country especially. There are some leaders like Martin Luther King, like MLK Jr., that I would like to start over with and say, hey, man, you had a dream. We didn't quite fulfill it yet. What are we missing, right? So I think about a lot of the problems, and not just racism, but intolerance in general in this country. I wish I could sit down with a guy like that and say, you know, what advice do you have to get there? So he'd be one on my list. They're not just three, but there are three for you.
That's awesome. Yeah, I really love those answers. It's definitely a tough question to answer too. I don't even know how I would answer it yet off the top of my head. So props to you. The next question is, if you were in college around our age, about 19, what side hustle would you start and how would you go about starting it?
I would, again, focus on something – well, that's not necessarily true. The easier one to do is something with intellectual property, something that requires your brain and not facilities, right? Because if you need an office, if you need delivery people, if you need inventory, if you need hardware, all those things are harder to start, but I won't tell you not to do those. So for me, I would say, what can I do that, like I said, involves my intelligence and my passion? Whether it is event planning, you know, event promotion, whether it is writing code, whether it is marketing campaigns, I could have walked to businesses around my college campus and say, hey, you want some ideas to improve your marketing? I'm a marketing consultant. And I could have sat and thought about, asked some questions. Who do you sell to? Where are those people? How do we find these people? How do you market today? A lot of traditional brick and mortar businesses don't know social media. Who knows social media better than anybody? You guys do, and your age group. So you could walk around to businesses and say, I'll manage all your social media for you from now. So I would think about a side hustle that takes my brain and my ambition before I think about one that requires equipment and setup and delivery. That's what I would try to find.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And especially in today's day and age with smartphones, tablets, computers, you could like just start something from your dorm room bed. Like, it doesn't really take much at all. And I think that's what people fail to realize, is you could literally just go out to businesses and prospect something as simple as managing their Instagram page, and they'll be all in. Like, you might not get, like, your success rate might not be high, but if you land two or three clients initially, that's all you really need to get started. So on to the last one. What is one thing you know today that you wish you knew when you were 19?
That people driven by passion and purpose far outperform people that driven by paycheck. People kept telling me, don't be an irresponsible dreamer. Just go get a job like everyone else. What's wrong with you, Jeff? Just go get a job, man. That's what it's about. In school, you know, that's what you're taught to do. We're preparing you to go get a job. A job is not life, right? Money, what I wish I'd known was that there's this thing that I'm going to call the quality of life equation. And the quality of life equation, every one of us has our own, has different variables. One of it is money. If you're broke, you're not as happy, right? It gives you additional stress. Making money alone doesn't make you happy. But financial health is one of the variables in your quality of life equation. Relationship health, your family relationships, relationships with your friends, your physical health, your spiritual health. All these things are variables that every one of them, and one of them's out of line, it screws up all the rest of them. Right? No matter how successful or rich or great your relationship is, if your health is bad and you're dying, you can't enjoy any of those things. So life is a multidimensional equation, and you got to look at all those variables, and don't let anyone convince you that just because you're rich or famous, that's going to make you happy. Those are only two variables in a complicated equation. I wish somebody told me that, and I wouldn't waste time chasing the wrong things early in my life.
That's incredible. And one last question real quick is, what do those people say to you now?
Those are the people that come back to you and ask you for a job or for money. Or let's close with this, the worst rap in the history of rap. So I was telling you about my friend Nelly the rapper. He and I have discussed this, and he actually has a lyric in a song where he talks about exactly what happens. Nobody believes in you, and no one remembers that they didn't believe in you. So here's the lyric from one of his songs, and I'm not going to rap it. I'm going to say it. But he said, so many people straight doubted my flow. They said that I'd be a failure. Now the same people asking me for dough, and I'm saying, I can't help you. And then they say, Nelly, can we get some tickets for your next show? And in the song, he goes, say what? Hell no. And then he gives them tickets anyway. So that's what happens. Nobody remembers that they didn't believe in you. Nobody remembers that they hated you, and they're all in line asking you for free tickets to the concert you produced that was never going to happen. That's just life. And you know what you do? Guys, you never lower yourself to their level. Not only do you say yes and give them tickets, but you upgrade them to VIP and say, enjoy the show, and then you head backstage.
That's amazing. That is the best way to end this interview.
Thanks, guys.
Want to say thank you, Jeff, for everything. That was a really fun time for Christian and I. We learned a lot, and I know our audience will as well. Just last thing for you is, if you just want to plug anything, I know you have a book out, and where our audience can find you on social media, because I'm sure they're going to be intrigued to follow you with whatever you do in the future. So.
Thank you very much. I'm not really selling anything per se. They can certainly reach out. The easiest way to find me is LinkedIn. That's the social media platform I'm on the most, is on my LinkedIn profile. But I'm Speaker Jeff on Twitter. And those are the only two I'm really at. But I'm happy to hear people's ideas, questions, whatever. And you guys need to keep me posted on the two of you and your journey.
Absolutely. We really appreciate your genuine interest in our podcast. You crushed it, honestly. We had a bunch of good laughs. You dropped a lot of knowledge for us, and we'll definitely keep in touch in the future.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Hey, guys, show some love for the Real Talk University podcast by subscribing and leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app. See you all next week.